This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rockin' Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rockin' Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Welcome back, everybody. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Tonight kicks off game week number two, the Thursday night game to kick off the second week of the NFL season. Our next guest, six-time Pro Bowler. Four times he led the NFL in passing yards. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. He's a member of the 1980s All-Decade Team. He's a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he's a member of the NFL on CBS's broadcasting team. Our friend Dan Fouch. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, DA. Good to be with you, bud.
As always, good to be with you as well. And Mitch Trubisky said something curious this week. He was asked about last Thursday night's loss against the Packers and said, I'm not allowed to talk about last week's game. Now, that seems a little weird to at least admit that. Did you ever have a coach say, no, don't talk about last week's game, especially to the media?
No. That is weird, isn't it? I mean, why would you not want to talk about it? I mean, people want to hear about it. They want to know why certain things happen. And really, if you don't talk, then people just make it up anyway. So it's better to have it come out of your mouth than somebody else's, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. And I wonder how much that is protecting a young quarterback. I get that the media can be ferocious and dig in on some things. But do you think that's about making sure a young quarterback isn't stuck talking about his flaws or a bad performance and trying to move him forward kind of artificially?
Well, there are ways of talking to the media without saying something. I mean, all you have to do is, listen to a guy like Tom Brady, and who is always very accommodating. But when he's done talking, you really don't have anything of substance because, he's smart and he's not going to give away stuff to, the media or his next opponent. So, protecting a young quarterback, if you've got to protect him from the press, that's not a good idea, and it's not something that's going to be very healthy down the road.
Yeah, you've got the call for Pats and Dolphins coming up in Miami, and the Dolphins, the reports were there were multiple Dolphins players that requested a trade after the debacle against Baltimore. Do you think that Brian Flores is at risk of losing his locker room this early in the season?
There's no question, and it doesn't help to have New England come into town to help dismantle that locker room. It's a tough situation because the speculation of tanking and that word is such a it's a bad word in a locker room. I mean, guys are trying their best to make a living playing this game and trying their best to win a game, and it's not easy when that type of atmosphere is around that locker room.
How do you, if you're a head coach, try to manage that? Because the players can see that the ownership doesn't necessarily want to put out the best product, but the coach is employed to try to get the best out of the players. How does Brian Flores sell it?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing a coach can do is be consistent in his message so that the players aren't confused there. Be consistent in what you're doing every week and be honest with the players and get the best players out there on the field that you can. And you got to play with the cards that are dealt to you. So this is what the Dolphins have.
Dan Fouts joins us here from the NFL on CBS. He's got Pats and Dolphins, which is a scary matchup, obviously, for the Dolphins. But we don't know what happens with Antonio Brown. If you're trying to prepare for this game, this broadcast, do you think we'll see AB on the field, or do you think the commissioner steps in?
Yeah, that's a good question. Nobody seems to know, and you can always speculate. But if you look at the lineup that the Patriots put out there at wide receiver, you don't see a need right now. You've got Edelman in the slot. You got Josh Gordon at the split end, and Dorsett is coming on at the flanker. So then you add in James White and Rex Burkhead out of the backfield, and nobody's talking about Gronkowski anymore because they didn't really need him in dismantling the Steeler defense last weekend.
The Jacksonville Jaguars lose their starting quarterback, Nick Foles, in the first half of the first game, and so here comes sixth-round quarterback Gardner Minshew, rookie, to step in, and he actually performed pretty well. What did you see? What do you think about the Jaguars going forward with a young Minshew? Can they still keep their season afloat?
Oh, there's no question that they can keep their season afloat. They've got an outstanding defense, and that's going to be the key for them, along with Leonard Fournette. I do think they need to develop another running back that can give Fournette a blow. But I think in Minshew, he gave that team such great confidence because of his accuracy and his coolness and the way he comported himself. But remember, he played for Mike Leach at Washington State, where he threw for over 4,000 yards and was the Pac-12 player, offensive player of the year. So he's used to throwing the ball, and that's not something that is new to him. And so he just relied on his personal history and his personal experience to go out there and perform, which he did very well.
As a Chargers legend yourself, we see the Chargers not buck into Melvin Gordon's contract demands, and Austin Eckler stepped in and did a great job in his place. Do you think Melvin Gordon's holdout was misguided?
I do. First of all, if you examine the situation, his contract and years in the league and all that, you see, he didn't have any leverage, and leverage is what it's all about in a negotiation. So the Chargers were wise not to buckle there because they do feel that with Eckler and Justin Jackson, they've got two backs that are similar in their style of offense. And remember, that offense is still Phillip Rivers' offense.
Dan Fouts joins us this morning on the show. Lamar Jackson lit up the sky last week with his arm, not his legs. We didn't expect to see that from Lamar Jackson. Do you think Lamar, we kind of undervalued in terms of his passing ability, or do you think that was mostly because the Dolphins were such a train wreck?
I think it's a combination. I think that he's very determined to show people that he can be a pocket passer. Great pass protection. Really poor defense on the back end, obviously, and a snowball type of effect in that ball game. So the scary thing for Miami is that their defense made Lamar Jackson look like Tom Brady. Well, guess what? The real deal's coming your way right now.
Yeah, now we got Tom Brady to look like Tom Brady in week number two. Final question with the AFC. We saw in week number one the Chiefs offense look like the Chiefs offense. They'll take on the Raiders. The Raiders offense didn't look like the Raiders offense, and that's a good thing. What do you think John Gruden's effect has been on Derek Carr? Because Carr looked really good last weekend on Monday night.
Well, he was very disciplined. There's no question about it, and that's a big part of the Gruden pass offense. And, you know, getting Tyrell Williams a big target, a fast target, is something that obviously very important for the Raider offense, and really any offense, is that somebody to stretch that zone coverage and give you some openings. So Carr got the good pass protection. Obviously, we didn't hear about Von Miller or Bradley Chubb very much in that ball game. So give the offensive line and the backs a lot of credit for giving Carr time to throw, and he really delivered.
Week two of the NFL on CBS will include games like KC and Oakland. Let's see Patrick Mahomes and company in week number two. Catch all the action this Sunday, starting with that other pregame show, Tops, on CBS Sports Network, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, followed by the NFL Today on CBS at noon. Dan Fouts will be in Miami for Pats and Dolphins. Dan, it's always really a pleasure to catch up. Thanks so much for doing it. We'll be watching this weekend.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Dan Fouts joining us this morning here on the DA Show. You want to jump in on any of those NFL topics, let's do it at 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. And connect with us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. We've got your best audio of the day coming up in Soundcheck. And that includes John Gruden, all right, looking for football players and talking about Antonio Brown. Because this guy was just a player. He's a good guy. I think he's very misunderstood. But it just didn't work out here, okay? But before we get there, and before we get to Super Dave's picks, yes, Super Dave has your college football picks. And week number one, he looked like Kenny Brock. Week number two, he looked like Robbie Rosenhaus. We'll see if he can even out the two. He went 3-0, then 0-3. He's going to give us his college football picks coming up here in about 20 minutes or so from now. But I want to go back to Bob Stoops, who talked to us about the 07 national championship game against Boise State, which, as I mentioned before, I've just been digesting and consuming a lot of college football's 150th anniversary. So there's been a lot of cool documentaries and lists and highlights and clips out there. And I was rewatching the 07 Fiesta Bowl and reading about the 07 Fiesta Bowl. And it is truly one of the greatest college football games ever. Because, of course, you had at that time, quote unquote, little Boise State. And you had at that time, Oklahoma, who had won a national championship and played for multiple others. So in this game, the final couple of minutes are just totally insane. If you have a chance and you need some time to kill or you just want to get your college football fix on, this college football weekend's not that great, by the way. So you might just want to go back and re-rack 07 Fiesta Bowl, especially if you're in Boise. Because, my God, this delightfully entertaining. And you've got, from Chris Peterson and Boise State, people just kind of remember, wow, yeah, Boise State slayed the Giant. Cinderella did it. You know, this was kind of before there had to be a group of five team in one of the New Year's Six bowl games. They crashed the party. And this kind of never happened in college football, crashing the party. So Boise State has taken on Oklahoma. And it's a crazy back and forth fourth quarter. And finally, OU is leading by 7 points, leading by a touchdown, 35-28 with 18 seconds to play. It's 4th and 18 from midfield for Boise State. So not only do they have to score a touchdown in 18 seconds, but they have to convert a 4th and 18 to do it. They've got 18 seconds to play from midfield. So essentially this is a Hail Mary, right? 4th and 18, you got to connect in a Hail Mary. And frickin' Chris Peterson runs the hook and ladder. He freaking runs the hook and ladder, which is just totally insane. On 4th and 18 from the 50, Zabransky goes back. He throws over the middle. It's 4th and 18. He probably connects for about 15 yards. It's a complete pass. Wide receiver starts cutting back to the middle of the field. Another member of the Broncos is cutting to the outside of him, to the far side of the field, or the near side of the field, rather, and they hand it off lateral, and the lateral works, and not only do they get the first down, that's the touchdown to tie it, and that's now 7 seconds on the clock. It is totally incredible that that thing worked. And so just right there, you're like, that was one of the greatest plays in college football history. And then to take stones and just put on more stones. They just ran hook and ladder on a 4th and 18 to climb to within one. So they kick the extra point, right? And then they go to overtime. And at the very least, if they lose in overtime, my God, what a finish. Boise State, you got to give them credit. No. Chris Peterson goes, we're going for it. We're going for the win. Okay, so right there, it's you got some big onions. I mean, you drop those things in that bowl of soup right there. That is, we're going for two. We're going for the win right now. Okay? So we're going for the win. This is how we're going to do it, right? And, or is that actually the end of regulation? I forget. Maybe we're talking about overtime here. I forget when they actually end up doing this. But they go for the two-point conversion. And at this point, they're going Statue of Liberty to win. Statue of Liberty to win. So the whole thing is just unbelievably gutsy and crazy and awesome. And we just asked Bob Stoops about coaching on the other side of that mismatch because it looked like David versus Goliath, although it really wasn't as crazy of a separation as you would think. But being on the other side of a matchup and an ending like that.
No doubt. I listen, Chris Peterson, I think, is a fabulous coach, and I've gotten to be good friends with him. And, no, you got to give him credit. I've always said that. And they were awful creative and executed it to beat us. So, you know, give him credit.
Outrageous. So, actually, they do go to overtime. I'm sorry, I mistakenly said that he goes for two right there. They go to overtime. They kick the extra point. They go over overtime. And that's when Peterson breaks out the Statue of Liberty. And it's the play that we'll always remember. I mean, the freaking Statue of Liberty worked. The freaking Statue of Liberty. That's basically like the annexation of Puerto Rico worked in a real game. And then we have a proposal right after that. And it's just the most crazy, memorable game of all time. And watching that, it's just hard to even put into words that that actually happened. I remember specifically watching that. I remember the living room that I was in because it was a million apartments ago. And the TV I was watching it on and the feeling that I had. And then doing the show the next morning, I just was floored by it. Mraz, do you remember watching the 07 Fiesta Bowl?
My parents' living room couch. Never forget it. Everybody I was watching with, which is pretty much my dad and another buddy, had gone to bed, and I watched the entire fourth quarter in overtime by myself on the couch, locked in. And I can tell you, to this day, I was eating Smart Food white cheddar popcorn to go with it. I remember that specifically because I remember having the white all over my pants because I was like so anxious watching. I kept rubbing my fingers in my pants.
So even at that point in time, you were staining all of your football watching clothes.
I was. It's so funny because I just remember, like, I had a nervous anxiety watching the game because how could you not be rooting for Boise as the game had prevailed? And I just remember looking down going, well, my thighs are white from this white cheddar popcorn because I keep rubbing.
Yeah, Zabransky actually rolls out in overtime, far sideline, on fourth down again. I believe it was fourth down again and connects on the touchdown in the end zone on fourth and two. So that it was a touchdown lead by Oklahoma. He rolls out. He hits the touchdown. At that point in overtime, that's when Peterson says, go for two. We're going for the win right now. Down 41-42 or 42-41 and gets the two-point conversion on the Statue of freaking Liberty. But again, Mraz, I've never seen the Statue of Liberty used except for that time. And it ended up winning the Fiesta Bowl.
It felt like you wanted to yell Al Michaels. He did what? Like, yeah. That's the reaction you had. It was so incredible. And I was still in school at the time and talking to friends at school the next day. Like, that's all anybody was buzzing about. It was just incredible to think now looking back, like, wow, Boise State was what you were talking about the next morning after a big Fiesta Bowl. It's crazy.
And in so many ways, they built a program out of that because now they're very highly regarded. They're oftentimes the best group of five program that everybody kind of looks at all season long as a party crasher. And in many ways, it forced the hand of college football to include group of five teams. That's why there's now a mandated group of five team that has to get in to a New Year's Six bowl game. It's a major bowl game, and there has to be a path for the Boise States, the UCFs, the programs that aren't in the Power Five conferences. It changed college football. We rarely, if ever, had a Cinderella. And then we finally had it, and we saw how magical it was. Incredible. When we come back here on the show, the best audio of the day, an emotional moment in New York last night on the anniversary of 9/11, and John Gruden on the newest Antonio Brown allegations. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
You know, he interviewed my old partner, too, Brian Jones, off of the show and didn't talk to me.
You know, yeah, I got down to Demon of Mandalorian, and I was like, I gotta rethink this.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
You gotta rethink it once it finally gets all the way down to me.
Okay, how long you been on the air, DA?
26 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. And week two of the NFL on CBS begins with an AFC East showdown battle between the Pats and the Dolphins. Then travel west to watch Mahomes and the Chiefs battle the Raiders in Oakland. It all begins with the NFL today only on CBS.
And because Pete the Body Bilotti is out this week, and because Billy Giacalone is in today, Mraz, of course, did not alert Billy G that after the CBS read, you play the retro CBS jingle. And that's because Mraz hates the jingle.
So stupid. It adds nothing to the program.
But now that it's become a signature, you got to do it.
It's not real. I don't think any listener thinks it's a signature. I think you and the body think it's a signature. I think you do it to taunt me. It's like a Dikembe Mutombo finger wave in my face.
But do you see what's happening here? You decided upon yourself to dictate what happens on the show because this is about you being annoyed.
No, because I'm the producer and yes. I am in charge of production.
Oh, you're in charge of production. How much production do you really do around
here? No, but if I hear something I don't like, I'm going to veto it.
I bet you never have done that ever before.
I did with this drop.
Yes, you just purposefully didn't tell Billy that this is when we play that drop.
You're also giving me too much credit. I also didn't remember.
That's probably more like it.
More like it. Also, if we're going to be really put all the cards on the table, I couldn't even tell you what Pete has it labeled as. Couldn't even find it if you asked me.
Good for you.
Yeah. You know what? It is good for me.
Yeah, really. You should be proud of more ignorance on the show. I don't know how anything works around here. I don't know.
I know what things are. I showed him where Champ Chump was yesterday. I know what a sound check is. I don't know what a CBS jingle is. Let me tell you something. There are certain things. You're giving me, again, too much credit. There are certain things Pete hides from me because Pete wants to have some value.
Yep.
Pete was angry when I put certain drops in your machine that he was playing, and he said, you're handcuffing me over here. That's what I do. So there are certain things Pete is not going to tell me where they are, because if I don't know where the secrets are, then he has value. It's his way of protecting himself.
I hate to protect Sean. You know that.
Yes.
Defend him, but in this instance, this is a long-standing conspiracy theory around these studios and hallways that Bilotti's ridiculous saving format, labeling format, is designed so that only he knows where certain things are, so we will always need Pete.
So Pete is in constant self-preservation mode around here.
Of course.
Of course. And you put that in with my lack of awareness completely?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're an easy mark.
Right, you have a bomb ready to explode right here on the other side.
It's very little trickery for you.
Yeah.
I fell for the Statue of Liberty with Pete.
I would even assume that Pete has, like, food nestled above, like, ceiling tiles, like a bag of Cheez-Its somewhere.
That sandwich still that's behind.
Just in case there's a major issue and we're stuck inside, he will be supplied and will have power because he can dole out snacks.
The second breakfast that I bought him, actually, he has hidden one of the ceiling tiles.
It's in the drop ceiling, right.
It's knocked twice, the thing falls, and all of a sudden Pete's the food king in a Holocaust.
Let's end up getting to your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Mets sensation, rookie sensation, Peter Alonso had special 9/11 cleats made for his teammates last night, as the Mets played at home on the 18th anniversary of 9/11, Major League Baseball had denied his request to wear a first responders hat for last night's game. And so Pete Alonso made very special 9/11 first responders cleats for everybody on the team.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of red tape with Major League Baseball, and they kind of shot that idea down. And I think it's kind of sad that guys weren't allowed to, I mean, since that day, that the first game back, they kind of shut it down every single year since. I think that's really unfortunate. So a way to kind of get around that was the cleats.
Well, a couple of things. Peter Alonso has consistently proven that he is a leader much beyond his years, that this is a young man, despite being a rookie, that holds himself, handles himself with a lot of maturity and diplomacy and leadership that usually comes with 10 years in Major League Baseball. Also, the Mets and the Yankees, but the Mets also, there's a lot that goes into home games at Citi Field in Queens around 9/11 because of it being a former staging area around 9/11 because of the Mike Piazza homer in the first game in New York back in 2001. And last night, incredibly, the Mets finished with 9 runs on 11 hits. So the scoreboard said 9/11 as a final last night. You couldn't make it up. An emotional night last night in New York and the towers where they used to stand. The lights are beaming up as we speak right now at night. And I went out for a run last night and saw those lights. And no matter what, it is always a pretty emotional thing to see and to think about and to process here in New York City. John Gruden was asked whether he knew anything about the Antonio Brown sexual assault allegations.
John, Antonio Brown, the lawsuit, did you guys know anything at all about that when you let go? Was it?
I'm not aware of any more of the questions, all right? So you want to ask about him, you can call his employer.
Well, for Antonio Brown, I think the Raiders, if you're John Gruden, just keep ignoring any AB stuff. He's not part of the Raiders anymore. It doesn't matter to the Raiders anymore. You didn't get anything in return for him. You're now 1-0. What Gruden and Mayock should tell this team is do not answer any questions about AB. And that's the only way to handle it. He's now somebody else's problem. And finally, Aaron Rodgers has one request for Packers fans this weekend.
My only ask is that we don't do the wave when we're on offense. Other than that, man, be as loud as you want, you know, from the start. Hopefully nobody, you know, says sit down anybody. I've heard that from time to time. You know, people, somebody standing up, somebody else tells them to sit down. But we'd love everybody to get up and be as loud as possible from the start. We need it.
The Packers are hosting the Vikings at 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday. How about just no wave in general? How about you go crazy, delirious, scream at all moments except when Aaron Rodgers is holding the football. And just no wave, because I think then we are starting to get back to sanity. I'm all for raucous fan celebrations, but I just feel like the wave is so brainless and mindless and useless that at Lambeau, 100 years of the NFL, we shouldn't be having dopey waves. No matter when it's happening in the game. Ban the wave. Okay, let's get to your college football picks coming up here after the break. Super Dave returns after a 3-0 sparkling opening weekend and 0-3 week two. Can he rebound? It's next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
Hey, good morning, DA. First of all, I want to pay you a compliment. I think you're the best thing in sports radio. You're so informative, and I get something out of your show every morning.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
41 minutes past the hour. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. And the best of video clips are always available online. You can check them out by simply going to YouTube every single day. Yes, we post the best of the DA show on YouTube every single afternoon after we are done here on the show. So that's an easy way to catch up on the best of clips every single day, the DA show on YouTube. Well, it couldn't have been that good for that long. Super Dave Friedman had the greatest debut in DA show picking history. He went a sparkling 3-0 in week number one. Now, that was Super Dave's first ever college football picks here on the DA. And so it could only have gone down from there. And boy, did it crash and burn. Super Dave went a clean 3-0 and then an even cleaner 0-3 in week number two. Can he rebound after Mraz's 2-1 opening week for the NFL? And we still need to decide what is on the line. It's time for Super Dave's picks.
It's a spread. It's a line. It's Super Dave.
We know Mraz has a big mouth to fill, and hopefully we are going to quiet that down this season. And oh, by the way, Florida State's been bad the last couple of years. What makes him such a genius?
With your weekly college football picks.
The line is what the line is. Why would they not play well in this game? This is just an unbelievable coaching mismatch.
Thank you, Super Dave.
Super Dave joins us here on the show. Super Dave, how you feeling after 0-3 last week?
I'm just glad I wasn't bumped for Joe Drape.
You know, we talked about that story earlier in the show. Our friend Joe Drape from the New York Times really taking a 2x4, a crowbar, to your beloved horse racing sport.
Yeah, I thought Mraz would be able to book him. I can send you his phone number if you want it.
No, I think we're okay. But since you are a horse racing aficionado, what'd you think about that story of them basically ignoring that Justify had tested positive for a banned substance tried to figure out a flimsy reasoning why and then let him race just because he was a Triple Crown threat.
D.I., I know this is breaking news. Horse racing is not particularly well run.
Somewhat corrupt or very corrupt?
Well, the NCAA has issues, the IOC has issues, FIFA has issues, and horse racing is right there with them.
Okay. Well, let's start with your picks. And Arkansas State and Georgia, this one obviously is a huge matchup in Athens coming up on Saturday at noon. But I do want to see how you're leaning in this one. Georgia's the number three team of the country. Georgia favored by as many as 33 points. What are you thinking about Bulldogs versus Arkansas State?
This is a noon kickoff for Georgia. They had their home opener last week. They host Notre Dame next week. Their wins are against Vanderbilt and Murray State. In the Sagarin ratings, Vanderbilt is ranked 146th, while Arkansas State is ranked number 70. Arkansas State lost to a pretty decent SMU team in week one, and they bludgeoned UNLV last week. And if you follow Arkansas State at all, they've had a really interesting situation. Their coach, Blake Anderson, is one of the risers in college football. He's going to be at a Power 5 school in the next couple of years. He lost his wife in August to breast cancer and hasn't been with the team for a month. He showed up at the UNLV game, and they had their biggest win in something like a decade. This is their Super Bowl, and Arkansas State is pretty good. They were 8-5 last year, 7-5 in 2017, and I think they look at this game like, this is our chance. We can prove ourselves. Maybe not win the game, but be competitive. I think Georgia's looking ahead to next week. I think this is an Arkansas State loss, but I think it's an Arkansas State loss by, 20.
Okay, Arkansas State plus the 33. Let's move on to FAU, Ball State. This one is going to be at Ball State, and this one's going to be at 2 p.m. Eastern time on the ESPN Plus channel side of things. FAU is favored by 2.5. Where are you leaning?
Well, FAU has lost twice this year to Ohio State and to UCF. Maybe the most difficult schedule in the country up until this point. You can say what you want about Lane Kiffin, his overall record, whether it be with the Raiders or Tennessee or USC. It is not great. He went 11-3 year one at FAU, 5-7 last year. But he's facing Mike New and Ball State here, who are 11-27 since New took over in 2016. He's a former Arena League head coach. They lost to Indiana in their opener, beat Fordham in game number two. I think Florida Atlantic just much more battle-tested, and they're ready to take it out on somebody.
Okay, FAU going on the road and getting a big win. And then finally, we've got Cal and North Texas. So these are all must-watch games, obviously, that you are picking here. But you know what? It doesn't matter as long as you win. That's the only thing that we're in it for, obviously. And North Texas is going to Cal, and Cal is a nearly 14-point favorite, 13.5 right now. What do you see here?
Well, I think Justin Wilcox has done a terrific job at Cal. He has taken over a program that was in big, big trouble, and he has given them an approach. He's given them an identity. They really, really play strong defense. You remember Wilcox's dad was an all-pro, Dave. He played cornerback and linebacker for the 49ers. This is a Cal team that comes off a huge win, 2019 at Washington in a game that was delayed by rain and was, finished at like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning Eastern time. Cal plays at Ole Miss next Saturday, and they're thinking they have a heck of a chance to be 3-0, beat an SEC team, maybe be 4-0, but Cal doesn't score. Last year, they averaged 21.5 points a game. This year, they beat UC Davis 27-13 and Washington 20-19. And North Texas, a little bit in the same way I described Arkansas State, they're one of those good mid-majors. Seth Luttrell took over the program 5-8 in year one, won 9 games each of the last two seasons. They're picked to win Conference USA. Luttrell is part of that Mike Leach tree, that very, very large Mike Leach tree. His quarterback, Mason Fine, is one of those guys that isn't going to win the Heisman, but it's like a borderline Heisman Trophy candidate, 9,400 career yards, 63% passing, 64 touchdowns in just over 3 years as a starter. They lost to SMU last week. They beat Abilene Christian in the opener. I don't know that they win the game. I just don't know that Cal scores enough points to cover.
Okay, so you like North Texas there and the points. Very good. Arkansas State, FAU, North Texas are the Super Dave 3-pack. His picks this week. We'll see if he can rebound after last week. Also, listen to the Bearded Carcast, where he's the voice of Winthrop basketball, goes on the road, some fantastic road trips and places to eat and things to see, and he dissects it all as part of the Bearded Carcast. His podcast available, all places podcasts are downloadable. And at some point, we're going to have to figure out what's on the line between you and Mraz here.
Absolutely. I think I might produce the show if Mraz loses.
Well, that's a win for all of us.
So
let's try to,
including me, racing talk. It's going to be Bob Baffert followed by Joe Drape, and it could get ugly.
Thank you, Friedman.
No problem. New Carcast coming out tomorrow to follow up on the Panthers and Bucks tonight.
Ah, very good. Okay, the Bearded Carcast, new episode coming up. That was Super Dave. Let's go back to one of the notes that you had Andrew Bogus deliver in the update. Sam Darnold is out indefinitely. Quarterback, New York Jets, diagnosed with mono, Coach Adam Gase says today, this morning. So that means, do you know who the Jets' backup is, everybody? Can you say Trevor Siemian? Now, Monday night, the Jets are going to take on the Cleveland Browns. That one's at MetLife Stadium. Gase hinted that Darnold could miss several weeks. Gase suggested the earliest likely return, week 5 in Philly. That would be after a week 4 bye. Now, that might sound crazy, but hear out why that might be the date. He's obviously going to miss this weekend, this Monday night against the Browns. Week 3 is the Patriots. Week 4 is a bye. You're kind of chalking up a loss to the Pats at this point. That's what you're basically doing. You're saying, you know what? We don't have much of a chance to beat the Pats anyway. Let's just eat it, then the bye, and then you know what? He's going to come back after that. But that also means the Jets could be staring at 0-3 in the hole. And this was a season that was supposed to be an optimistic, build up, new coach, young quarterback on the rise type of season. Signing Le'Veon Bell, C.J. Mosley. This was supposed to be a year of movement upward. Ascension by the Jets. And now you lose week 1 in dreadful fashion to the Bills at home. Now you've got no Darnold for the foreseeable future, and indefinitely is scary. And if you lose to the Browns, you then got the Patriots. And then after that, you got the Eagles in week number 5. Brutal. Absolutely brutal. And some things are just not fair. Let's face it. Some things in sports are just not fair. Like, Jets fans had all of this hope. They drafted the right guy, and he just happens to come down with mono in the middle of the season. Like, why couldn't he have mono in May? Why couldn't Sam Darnold have mono at any other point in the calendar year except when you need him every week to play football? It's brutal. By the way, the Browns now have absolutely no reason to lose this game. If the Browns cannot beat the Jets without Sam Darnold, if they can't beat Trevor Siemian quarterback New York Jets, I don't want to hear about the Browns at all being any type of contender, division winner, etc. They looked like dreck in week number 1, getting blown out by the Titans, and now it is squared up for them, bird on a dish. You got Trevor Siemian quarterbacking the Jets. By the way, I don't know. People say that Adam Gase is some type of offensive genius, that even though his eyes dart all over the place, you know, he's just kind of a weird duck, but still he's a really smart guy. There's been nothing about Adam Gase that I trust so far with the Jets. He has pointed the finger. He has blamed. He has made rash, quick roster decisions. The offense last week looked like a mess. What exactly is Gase bringing to the table? Mraz, he's got crazy eyes, but at least he's supposed to have a smart offensive brain. Peyton Manning loves him. What are we supposed to hang our hat on if you're a Jets fan?
Yeah, I don't know. And what got lost last week is the Jets, 8 of their points were scored off of a pick six or a fumble recovery and a safety. So even if you want to argue they didn't score enough points, well, they certainly didn't score enough points offensively. He's there to control the offense and all that comes with it. Trevor Siemian, I believe, I could be wrong, was a Denver backup when he was still in Denver before going to Miami.
Not sure if Gase was still there, but certainly Siemian was in Denver.
Point being, you know, everybody wants to throw dirt with Darnold out, and I understand. Gase is supposed to be a quarterback and offensive guru, right? Go figure out a way to score points on Monday night with Trevor Siemian.
The New York Jets offense scored 8 points in that game. 8 points of the opener. The little screen pass, a little short pass to Le'Veon Bell. He gets into the end zone. They get the two-point conversion, but everything else was a safety and a pick six by C.J. Mosley. When we come back here on the show, Antonio Brown, could he be suspended by the NFL and not play for the Patriots this weekend?
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.